If you are a chef that's curious about how to keep your knife skills sharp and your flavors fresh, then you've got to meet Pablo Valencia. Pablo Valencia is a chef and entrepreneur who's inspired by the old culture and old traditions and bringing the food of yesterday into today's light. Today, Pablo and I are going to explore his culinary journey that began in his grandmother's backyard, to his career as a chef, and how he's now finding success as the owner of Scratching the Plate, where he brings the restaurant experience right to you. Welcome to the No Hesitations Podcast, the show where restaurant leaders learn tools, tactics, and habits from the world's greatest operators. I am your host, Kristen Marvin, with Solutions by Kristen. I've spent the last 2 decades in the restaurant industry and now partner with restaurant leaders to help them overcome burnout, increase retention, reignite their passion, and drive successful businesses. I also work directly with restaurant leaders through one-on-one coaching and group workshops to help them identify their blind spots, build their confidence, and overcome challenges in their business. If you're curious about learning more, visit my website at kristenmarvin.com/contact to book a 15-minute goal planning session. This podcast is sponsored by Schedulefly. Schedulefly provides a simple, web-based and app-based restaurant employee scheduling software backed by legendary customer service. If you are using pen, paper, Excel, or fancy scheduling software with tons of bells and whistles that you don't use, Schedulefly is perfect for your business. When I was a regional manager handling 7 locations, Schedulefly was our go-to for scheduling. It's hands down the easiest platform that I've ever worked with. And their employee scheduling tool is awesome for shooting out mass messages about crucial restaurant updates. Visit Schedulefly.com and mention the No Hesitations podcast to learn more and get 10% off. I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, Pablo, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks so much for being here. I'm so excited so excited to share your story with listeners today. You and I had a chance to connect for the first time a few weeks ago at City of Gastronomy event where you were doing a cooking demonstration. And it's funny because I've heard your name around town and I had yet to meet you, and come to find out we kind of moonlight with the same, one of the same chefs in town, Chef Janos. So super excited to be able to connect today.
That's a common story about people like not really seeing me face to face, but like they hear me kind of dancing around. That's kind of like why I guess some people call me the kitchen assassin, because like I was just quiet and kind of just like did my thing and like moved on. But I mean, it's got me pretty far. So
I love that. Well, let's talk about the kitchen assassin. Where did this name come from and how long have you had it?
Oh, well, I mean, I probably heard it like maybe 2 gut seasons ago. But it was just kind of funny, like how it was just kind of brought up. I liked it. I can't say it's a sticking title. It was just kind of like a honorary thing that I heard, and I chuckle at it because it's kind of funny.
I love it. You, we're going to get into your story in just a little bit, but you just brought up a big, you know, an awesome topic that I would love for you to highlight. Would you tell the listeners what gut is and your involvement and what it's all about?
Oh man. So Gastric, Union of Tucson is awesome. I've been trying to get with them probably since they started, because like they fascinated me with what I've been wanting to do since day one. So their origin kind of like fascinates me. You have to be invited, and I was invited, and it's been an honor ever since. Like you get to play with the best chefs here in Tucson, and they are like their own little superheroes, man. Like every single one has their superpower, and when they all get together, it's cool to like see them kind of like unite and see just like brilliant minds kind of like make a huge picture. But they are part of UNESCO. We were the first city in the U.S. to be recognized by that, so that's really really cool. So like I really really. I want to support that and continue with that. That's it. That's the exact association that I want to be a part of. And like
I love it.
Heritage cooking is a huge thing to me, because that's basically like where I came from, and I didn't know how rooted it was in Tucson food background until like probably the past 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and you,
being
sorry
in, like,
to interrupt you, Pablo, but
no, yeah, go
you
ahead.
Gut does some pretty cool legendary events. I've heard of like Knife
Oh, yes, they
Fight.
do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Knife Fight, the origin of which I really wish I knew more of, but basically it's kind of like the back alley version of the Iron Chef. And I can totally get behind that. Like, I really want to be in next season. But yeah, basically it's just the individual talent of Tucson coming together and putting their best skills to work. And they bring some of the coolest secret ingredients. Yeah, like
I
it's a
love
blast
that.
because it's
Are
hard.
those events open to the public or are they invite
Yep.
only? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. When Knife Fight season comes around again, they advertise it on Instagram, Facebook, and whatnot. Gary Hickey and Michael Elefante pretty much head that, and
Nice.
If you follow them, they will spot that stuff all day long. But
yeah, love
they
their
are public
restaurant.
events. And they're at really happening spots too, like the Monica, the Playground, Dante, so forth and so on. So like, it's
I
a really
love
cool
it.
place to like see the culinary communities just like have fun
I
and
love
fight
it.
it out, you know?
Great. So let's go back to your mention about heritage foods. How did you first get into culinary? What were some of those original inspirations?
Original inspirations, probably when I was a child, but like that was kind of like accidental because I didn't really realize how important that actually was until I got into like my later, like I guess teen years. But basically what I'm saying is I grew up in a small town, and my grandparents raised me and my sister. So like we cooked everything from our yard. We chopped nopale, we butchered our chickens, we did all that stuff ourselves from like kindergarten to like about sixth grade. And it was amazing. Like I didn't really understand what we were doing quite yet. I just thought that was a normal thing. And then the world showed me that it really wasn't. And cooking just like with pibs, like we used to dig holes. And I thought it was a joke. When I was bored, my grandpa would have me dig a hole. And me just being like a sarcastic kid, I was like, fine, like being very, very mad digging this hole. But he would actually make an oven, and we would make our beef in there for that night. And that always fascinated me. So yeah, like just small things like that, like cooking old school, using just raw ingredient from the little yard to table, say like 4 feet away. Later on when I realized how like important that was, I wanted to continue it. But fast forward later on in life, first actual job in a restaurant, I was a dishwasher, great dishwasher, just horrible employee. But
we've all been there, right?
but I made a really good living. And was it one day a prep cook, just no call, no show, and Chef Gino, he hardcore Italian dude, like the entire place was Italian. It was the Old Father Inn. I mean, not the Old Father Inn. Roma Cafe behind the Old Father Inn on Ina and Old Father back in like 99 and like, was it 90, 91 or so? But anyway, prep cook called out, and Chef Gino discovered that I had a palate from then. And then I moved to line cook and became infatuated with the noise, the stress of it, and wanted to build kind of that background of it. So
yeah, it's so common, isn't it, that we get put into positions with zero training, and that's how our journeys start.
yeah, exactly, man.
Sink like or swim.
yeah, exactly. So I've been trying to run since in this field for a very long time. I'll be 41 this year, so I've been in food since I was 16, so it's not too shabby.
Where did your culinary journey take you from there?
Oh man, we traveled a lot. So like I became like AGM and manager of a lot of fast food restaurants kind of like past that, like during high school and stuff like that.
Yeah.
A little after high school. And then started working for Caruso's later on, like 2009-ish.
And that's
right
one of the
Kima.
Oldest restaurants in town, right?
Yes, correct. I think the second oldest restaurant too. I'm pretty sure. The oldest on Fourth, or the Shanty is one or the other, but it's not very old. One or the other. But yeah, after Pima, went to Caruso's for a bit. I was probably there for about 7 years. Learned quite a bit just about cooking for a mass amount of people, and did it really well. And wanted to just expand my skills and expand my knowledge. So left there, went to Dante's, learned all about Chef Tanner's skills, Tanner Fleming. He is CDC over there at the Cornette, very good guy. Learned a great deal from him. Chef Kenneth, also, I'm sure you guys know him, Iron Chef Ken. he's a very good mentor of mine. And yeah, learned quite a bit from that point. And then of course just wanted to like push harder and just learn more, and went to Wildflower, started doing Fox restaurants, became a little bit more uniform, faster, better, sharpening my skills basically. And
Yeah,
then
and you and I talked about this when we met for coffee, but tell the listeners about that transition for you from local restaurants to going into kind of the corporate or chain environment. What was that transition like for you?
oh man, like well, to be honest, like I was a messy cook, honestly, and in a corporate setting, there is no messy cooks, and like you fall in line. And I really appreciate that because, like, since my stepdad was militant, like when I did kind of have that growing up background part of me, it kind of fell into place. So like just falling in line drills, cleanliness, logbooks, all that stuff, just like
Nice.
the common sense stuff, but just to be like more routine
Yeah,
about it.
you appreciated the systems that they had in
Yeah,
place.
and like how everybody fell in line. There's a lot more camaraderie when it came to doing like the corporate mandated things. It wasn't so like mundane. So yeah, that was actually really greatly appreciated. And I try to like teach that as I go, because like that type of hierarchy, like yes chef, no chef, like that's there for a reason, and we need to be like loud and proud about it. And
Yeah.
yeah.
That's awesome. Where did you go after Wildflower?
Actually, we just started cutting and did our own thing. Scratching the plate kind of became a flower. It was cool. It was a thought at first. Like it was every Wednesday, I would kind of like challenge myself. I would pick three ingredients from the store that I've never cooked with, that in my mind wouldn't really go together, and I made a meal with that. That was every Wednesday, and that was just kind of to like sharpen my axe, pretty much.
Yeah, what
And
was your inspiration for doing that?
just to keep it hard, because I never wanted to be comfortable.
Nice.
The second you're comfortable, I think you plateau. And if you just constantly dissect profiles, your own skills for that matter, like how much can you do at one time, or if you even can do it. And there's pretty much almost nothing that I can't do so far. So I appreciate that, my
I
about
love it. Did you go
my
into
learning.
that knowing that you wanted to open your own business?
Yeah, I mean, like I wanted to open up a concept. Like a brick and mortar would be nice, and that's in the future, yes. The concept of what scratching a plate is basically returning back to the table. Like there's a scenario that I ask people, like, hey, when you were growing up, like what was your favorite meal? Like what was that one thing that you just kind of close your eyes, think back, like I don't care how small it was, just what was it? And usually what ends up happening is that they tell me about a meal, yes, but they tell me about the table. They tell me about their mom. They tell me about their dad. They tell me about the surroundings, and they change their whole app, their whole being changes. Like they enjoyed that experience, and that is what I want to bring back to everything. Like I want to bring that nostalgic feeling back to the table. Like I want everybody to just stop for 1 second, enjoy the food for what it was, for what it is, because that is what used to happen. Like people used to spend a week on a plate, and the whole family would get around the round table, long tables, and enjoy it. Every single person had a role in that food making process. That's what I would love to get back to. Cause that's just like so rich to me. Like that's so organic and raw, that you can't get past that experience because you will never have that again. I think with the times now that we're just busy and to slow down and to appreciate something like that is very rare.
I love that.
I want to be a part of that experience again.
I love it. And you're really doing such an awesome job creating that experience for people. Will you talk a little bit about what Scratching the Plate does?
So Scratching the Plate basically brings every aspect of a restaurant to you, even like how hard it can be. What I mean by that is, for example, I've done anniversary dinner on a hiking trail in Gates Pass, a little ways down the path, with a table, a heater, a burner, two candles, and I would just walk off a few hundred feet, come back every now and then. I do that. I cook for people at their houses, like little micro weddings. Like everything I do is pretty much upfront. 99.9% of what I do is made in front of you because I want you to appreciate how it's made, not just like it's there in front of you. Like I want you to appreciate the process of the product, not just the product itself.
I love that.
Hey there, podcast friends. I hope you're enjoying these impactful conversations and leadership insights I'm bringing you each week. Before we dive back into today's episode, I want to take a moment and reach out and ask a small favor that would go a long way in supporting the show. If you've been loving the content I'm providing, please take a moment to leave a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Not only does it make my day, but it also plays a pivotal role in helping the show grow. Your reviews boost my visibility, attract new listeners, and encourage exciting guests to join me on the mic. So if you want to be part of my show's growth journey, hit that review button and let me know what you think. Thanks a million for being awesome listeners.
And then how does Heritage Foods play a role in that?
Yeah, Heritage, like, because that's our region's flavor, our history. Like every section of the world has their story of food. And ours is just fascinating. The more I learn about Father Kino, the more I learn about just how much Tohono O'odham has actually like had a role in just this current now food culture, like how we use the squash from thousands of years ago. That just blows my mind. Like that's just what we do still. The chiltepín, like that's a regional pepper that like it's hard to get outside of this region. And like to have something like that just constantly tastes good in so many different ways because like I said before, like every single chef just has their interpretation of art, and I love seeing how they can twist a nopale, how they can twist a squash, how they can twist this, you know, just really cool things. But yeah, Heritage Foods, like that was my food when I was growing up, and I was doing prep work when I was in grade school, and I hated it at the moment. I was carving squash and I was gutting chickens and, we were doing all that stuff when we were kids. So like it plays a role to me because it's nostalgic to me because it makes me feel that feeling that people tell me about their favorite meal when they were a kid. Yeah. So that's kind of probably why I'm trying to go to that.
I love that. My husband and I have just been absolutely obsessed with learning what food grows in the desert. And like you, every time I learn more and more and more about the heritage foods and see the gorgeous squash and everything that we grow, I'm just in awe of it and want to learn more and more and more and taste the flavors. And we've been working really hard on growing a lot of things in our house. I know we were talking about that when we just got together recently, but I love going to the farmers markets I love that they're year round and just seeing what's available every single week. Published an episode 23 with Gloria Badia, who owns Chiltepica, that you did the demo with at TCOG. And I didn't know, Tyler and I didn't know what chiltepines were until we moved here. And then I learned about her and her product and her salsas and her spice mix. And now we're obsessed and we're buying every product of chiltepine that we can find. around town and the local grocers. And it's just it's such a blast playing around with these new ingredients. So
I love how like these markets just still just have like the raw ingredient here, like the tempuri bean. I can walk there and still get them. And they've been here for thousands of years too. Like I love that. Like we consistently use our produce, and I want to continue that.
I love that. So you are so involved in the community, and you've created so many great relationships over the years. Will you talk a little bit about why that aspect of community is important to you and how that helps you develop as a leader and a business owner?
Oh man. Cause like, I don't care how good you think you are, without new inspiration, you're going to be like a dying flower. Cause like you constantly need new ideas, new inspiration. And that's what other great minds do. So networking, like talking with other chefs, like how did you become what you are? Like I know you're amazing. I want to know your story. And just sharing those words, sharing those ideas, like makes more than just a stronger culinary bond like here in Tucson, but it creates just like a camaraderie like at events that you take with you. So like those grow into like business relationships as well. Like a large part of these restaurants are investments, and if we didn't have those strong connections, we probably kind of just like dwindle out. So learning from the old school masters, like how they planted a million seeds and were successful at it. Chef Yanos, like he's a good one to actually learn from, because he's done it several times.
Yes.
People that just have like great showmanship. Gary Hickey's like great on stage. Like he just knows like how to just be a great presence, a great chef. So like just things like that. Like you can take your interpretation of that artist and learn and grow. And like, that's what I want to push to, is like just constantly learning, no matter how old you are, just like, let's teach, let's keep going. Cause food culture changes. It's like so fast from 10 years ago, Tucson was different. So like, and it's going to change every single decade. So
absolutely. How does that mindset translate into your food?
It forces you to keep reinventing yourself as an artist, whatever medium that you choose to use. But you constantly have to reinvent your pictures. Why am I amazing? Am I still amazing? So like just constantly sharpening your skills, because like since times changed, the science of food is constantly changing. Like every single year I see a different contortion of what gastronomy can actually be. So keeping up with that is super important. Newer techniques, like yes, keep the old techniques, but yeah, some of the newer ways are just like, it'd be unwise for you to fall short of that, because the world speeds up so quick, and you just kind of fall behind, honestly.
Yeah, I love it. You're such a curious chef and a curious person, and I love that you are comfortable being uncomfortable, because that's where growth happens, right? And where you discover new things, and you have made a lot of mistakes in your dishes over the years, and right? And that's how you learn. Yes. You make tweaks and get better. So I love that. How do you develop yourself as a leader? I mean, we know this industry, whether you're in a restaurant or you've got your own business, the hours are long, you're doing a lot of work behind the scenes, right? It can be a very unhealthy business, as we've seen, right? There's substance abuse issues, drugs and alcohol. How do you take care of yourself physically and mentally beyond connecting with your community?
That is a hard thing to do. Living a quote unquote healthy lifestyle in an industry like this is not easy. I guess no matter what kind of like spectrum you are on the culinary scale, because I'll go through seasons where like I have like three events a weekend and I'm not eating for a large period of time, but the important part is to actually recognize those durations of time to where you're actually not taking care of yourself, and really manage your time a little more, because you as a person are a lot more important than the business. Yes, that sounds silly to say, but without you, there is no business. So taking that 5 minutes to either A, just work out, take a long bath, take a walk, just like self-medicate in a different way. I mean, yes, there are substance abuse problems like all the time and in a lot of professions. And it's almost like mandatory in this one, but, keeping a straight head and like knowing your priorities is key. I think that was a big difference between young Pablo and older Pablo, is that, recognizing that like you have a lot more responsibility and a lot more benefit to those responsibilities than you did when you were 20 years old. So being slowed down by either a vice isn't in the cards anymore, because you got to make this thing grow. And the second you stop, it's going to stop. So yeah. as a leader, translation, I tell people that basically like nothing is impossible, man. Like nothing is impossible. Like I was homeless and I came back from nothing. So the stresses that you see as you are younger, let's say you want to pursue this field, they're going to be hard. You're going to want to stop on the regular. But nobody's going to dream your own dream, and it's going to be really, really hard. But yeah, you just don't stop when you yourself is telling you to stop. Nothing is impossible. Yeah, just keep doing things that make you feel very uncomfortable, because you'll succeed, honestly. Because I've succeeded quite a bit, and I know that a lot of people can. I've seen great cooks come from nowhere, and that should be recognized too. And I know that they're sitting on the street, sitting on a line somewhere else. I'm out there, like that's just phenomenal. And I want to find them. I want to show them that, hey, there's still these skills. There's still these teachings. Like let's go, let's do this, because yeah, like let's go up. There's a lot more benefit than just sitting on the park bench, you know?
I love it. So, for anybody out there that is thinking about getting out of the kitchen and starting their own business, what advice do you have for them?
Let your work speak for itself. Be loud when you're supposed to be loud, but let your work speak for itself. I'm sure like we've all seen those, pompous culinary students that come straight out of school on the line thinking that they can set the whole place on fire, and they end up doing but the wrong way. So yeah, just keep your head low, but be confident even when you're not confident. Yeah, keep walking forward. Like there is nothing that will stop you except the stress in your own head. And if you can manage that, the line's nothing, the food's nothing, the plate's nothing. At the end of the day, it's just food on a plate. And that mentality kind of helps quite a bit, honestly.
I love that. I work a lot with clients around managing, recognizing those negative thoughts and managing them, because those negative thoughts are the ones that cause all of our stress and anxiety and depression and resentment, right? And so I love your mindset. I think you're super inspiring, and you've been through an incredible journey and on an incredible journey. And I just thank you so much for being here and sharing your story with listeners. Yeah. I can't wait to come to a knife fight and check out what's going on. So will you tell the listeners how they can get a hold of you and find Scratching the Plate?
All right. Scratching the Plate. Instagram, Scratching the Plate, all one word. Facebook too, Scratching the Plate. Yeah, those are my two biggest hotspots. Drop me a message and I will hit you back. That's how you do it. It's really, really easy.
I love it. Awesome. Pablo, thank you so much again for being here. Awesome. All right, everybody, be sure to share this podcast with any leaders that you know in the restaurant industry, and be sure to check out my step-by-step guide on how to retain your employees at my website at kristinmarvin.com. We'll talk to you next week, everybody.